16 current and incoming members of Congress signed a letter yesterday challenging House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi's bid to become Speaker of the House again when Democrats take back the House next year. It is the latest move in a leadership fight that could determine the direction of the Democratic Party. Pelosi has been one of the party's most prominent players in Washington for decades. We want to take a step back now and look at how she got to be where she is today. And for that, we're joined by Mike DeBonis, who is a congressional reporter with The Washington Post. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Jeremy.
And let's get some background. First of all, Pelosi's father was a congressman from Maryland when she was born. He later became the mayor of Baltimore, as did one of her brothers. She didn't get into politics until later in life. How did that happen? How did she get into politics?
So she actually came up through the state party. She was an activist and involved in the party infrastructure. At one point, the longtime congressman in San Francisco had died in the mid to late 80s, and she emerged as as his successor.
She won in a special election in 1987.
That's right.
What were her early years as a politician like?
In Congress, I can speak most knowledgeably about her time in Congress. She came up and immediately tried to do what you used to do to be a good member of the House, which is pay your dues, literally and figuratively, raise money, but also learn the legislative ropes. She, over a course of years, won a spot on the Appropriations Committee, which perhaps the most important committee in the House that spends the money, has incredible control over what government does and doesn't do. She was named to the Intelligence Committee later in her congressional career, which is, again, a very rarefied post mm-hmm. that is earned and is selected solely by the party leader. It's not done on the basis of seniority. And she often talks even today about how she was forged in appropriations and intelligence. And what she means when she says that in appropriations is that you're constantly negotiating, and you're negotiating with your opponents on the other side, but in a very even-handed and fair-minded and not ideological way. You're trying to drive a hard bargain on spending the people's money, but at the end of the day, you shake hands and you make a deal. And on intelligence, you're dealing with the most sensitive national security issues in the country. I think that she sees that as part of her concept of what public service is.
And then in 2006, she became the first woman ever elected to be Speaker of the House. Here is the president at the time, George W. Bush, beginning his State of the Union address after her election.
Thank you very much. And tonight I have the high privilege and distinct honor of my own as the first president to begin the State of the Union message with these words, Madam Speaker.
Now, Pelosi has talked a lot about the hurdles women face in politics and many areas of American life. How has sexism impacted her career?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it's one that she's gotten a lot over the years. She talks about coming to Congress and it being a boys' club, and nothing was handed to her. She talks about having to combat the perception that she was somebody's wife, or not somebody who had come to power through her own merits. And that in the House and in Congress, that had been the experience for decades and decades, was that for the most part, a lot of the women who were serving in the House and in the Senate were spouses of members who had died. It was people who had powerful husbands, connections like that.
Even though her father was a member of Congress, as we said.
Absolutely. And her husband was and is a very wealthy political donor and somebody who's certainly powerful himself. But she's been very assiduous over the years about establishing her own political identity and not being boxed in or defined by men.
Let's listen to a little of Pelosi speaking on election night in 2006. Here she is.
The American people voted for a new direction to restore civility and bipartisanship in Washington, D.C. And Democrats promised to work together in a bipartisan way for all Americans.
So that was before she became speaker more than a decade ago. It sounds kind of similar to some of the things we're hearing today, a call for civility and bipartisanship. But her image seems not to be that way, that she's very polarizing today. Is that her goal, is to have civility and bipartisanship, or does she want to be a champion of the left?
She has always been very careful in her rhetoric. She's always been someone who talks about bipartisanship, who talks about the need to sit down at a table and listen and to be bipartisan. But that is not the way that the Republicans she has dealt with have portrayed her. Mm-hmm. They have found great success in basically caricaturing her as someone who represents all of the excesses of the political left. Quite frankly, they've spent many years and tens of millions of dollars driving this idea among Republican voters and swing voters that Nancy Pelosi is someone that represents the worst of the Democratic Party. And if you vote for a Democrat, you're handing her power and she's going to attack all the things that you hold dear.
Well, a couple of things that she can point to in her career in Congress is, number one, she was a proponent of gay marriage back when her party was pushing the Defense of Marriage Act. She also voted against the authorization for the use of military force in Iraq when a lot of Democrats voted for it. What are some of the key issues that she can point to over her career?
Well, when you look at her ascent into the leadership and, you know, the campaign in 2006 that made her speaker, the Iraq war was by far the dominant issue. She was, you know, out front, and because of her position on the Intelligence Committee, had some credibility in speaking out against the war. And as the whole party sort of seized on the war as an electoral issue, she was very well positioned to say, I can lead on this, and I'm the person who can go up against George W. Bush and keep America from getting into any similar sort of engagement.
And when it comes to real legislative achievements, you'd probably put the Affordable Care Act at the top of her list. This is her in 2010 answering Jim Lehrer of PBS, who asked if she thought the bill, the Affordable Care Act, would cost Democrats their majority in the upcoming midterm elections.
I said if passing this bill means I have to walk out of my office that night, it would be with the greatest pride. But I don't have any intention of losing the Democratic majority. It's too important to the country. It's too important to the lives of the American people.
Now, Democrats did, of course, lose their House majority that year, although you could say that they got it back this year because also of the Affordable Care Act and health care.
Right. And that's one of the great ironies of what's happening right now. If you asked Nancy Pelosi of her greatest legislative achievements, there's no doubt she would start with the Affordable Care Act. I think it's hard to understate how important she was to passing that and passing a very robust version of that bill at a time when the legislation was just under siege from all directions, not only from Republicans but from moderate Democrats. Nancy Pelosi said, we're not going to do a smaller bill. We're going to do a very robust Affordable Care Act. We're not going to give up. And she set the tone and paved the way for the bill to be passed in the House and then later in the Senate the following spring. So she, rightfully so, gets tremendous credit for doing that.
So that brings us to today, and she's facing a leadership challenge at the moment. We'll see if she's able to become speaker again. But one of the things that's been said about her is that she's a very prolific fundraiser. On the other hand, there are those who say it's time for a new direction for the Democrats. This is Nancy Pelosi speaking in 2012, responding to a reporter who asked if her staying on was hurting the party in the long term.
The fact is, the fact is that everything that I have done in my almost, decade now of leadership is to elect younger and newer people to the Congress.
So how difficult is this battle at this moment for her to become speaker again?
This is not a speed bump. This is actually a pretty serious challenge. I think the numbers, the simple arithmetic of the challenges is that if everyone who now says that they won't vote to install Nancy Pelosi as speaker keeps their word, she won't be speaker.
Even though she could do it with Republican votes.
She could, but I'll be honest. That gets a lot of chatter and discussion in the media, but on Capitol Hill, it's just not seen as a real possibility. You would essentially be handing leverage to Republicans, and it's simply not going to happen.
So therefore, what do you think will happen now?
Well, listen, she has a huge number of tools in her toolbox as the only declared candidate and the person who has you know, widespread support. She can call on an entire legion of fellow lawmakers to help lobby. She herself is having conversations with all of these people, and she can ask them basically, what do you need to support me? And she's in a position to deliver all sorts of things, ranging from campaign help to perhaps the most important thing is committee assignments. She has almost total influence over what committees people sit on. And all of this together, people are not counting her out. And she's faced challenges before that I think were just as daunting, you know, including passing the Affordable Care Act, and she made it happen. So there's a reason that people are not counting her out at this point. But, you know, as I said, the math is the math, and she's got a lot of work to do.
That is Washington Post reporter Mike DeBonis talking with us about Nancy Pelosi. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.